You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Excuse me. Tonight, my guest is Ken Rolla. Ken is a natural health educator and inventor from New Smyrna Beach, Florida. He has been teaching classes and retreats since 1993 on rejuvenation and cellular regeneration using raw and sprouted vegetarian food, herbs, food-based natural supplements, detoxification, emotional healing, reprogramming of limited unconscious beliefs, ancient esoteric techniques, and cutting-edge science. Currently, Ken's focus is developing natural solutions for new severe threats to our health, such as nuclear radiation, geoengineering pollutants, genetically modified foods and microorganisms, electromagnetic pollution, nanotechnology, biowarfare agents, depleted food, and other issues. You may see interviews with Ken on Gaiam TV, Red Ice Radio, and elsewhere on his website, which is www.freshandalive.com. You can also find him on Facebook. So let's welcome him back to the show now. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hi, Lance. It's good to hear from you again.
Yes, it's been a while.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you have learned plenty since our separation.
Yeah, things continue to get interesting. Yeah.
Don't they, though?
For sure. Yeah, especially in the last year, I have gotten connected with Dr. Samir Osmanagic, who's the archaeologist that discovered the largest pyramids in the world so far in Bosnia. And because of my work with skater waves and skater technology, he became familiar with my work and invited me to come to Bosnia and speak to his conferences, which I've been doing.
Wow.
And studying the pyramids, and most recently, just a few weeks ago, we had a gathering. He had a conference for the public at the pyramids in Bosnia, and then he had a private gathering of some scientists and engineers to study the healing aspects of the pyramids and figure out how we can take that and teach people how they can create that for themselves around the world.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, of course, you know that there is a Russian scientist, Valery Uvarov.
Oh, yeah, he was there.
Oh, he was. Oh,
yeah,
wonderful.
He's a friend of mine. We've become friends.
Isn't he great?
I love him. I absolutely love him. He's a brilliant man.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was there. There were several Russians there. Konstantin Korotkov, mm-hmm. who's a renowned physicist and medical doctor from St. Petersburg, was there. He's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
He developed used to be called the GDV camera in the United States, and they now call it the BioWell, but basically, it's a camera that can take real-time images of the biofield of a living mm-hmm. organism or of a space or an object, not the biofield, but mm-hmm. it basically can visualize and measure scale waves, and then it can determine what's going on with the health of the body, and then it can help correct it. So he's a very brilliant man. So, yeah, it was actually kind of the culmination of some dreams. For several years, I'd been wanting to study with some of these amazing Russian scientists that are making all kinds of brilliant discoveries and are pioneers in a lot of things.
Yes,
and
they are.
I thought I was going to have to go to Russia to do it, but wound up, you know, we met these guys there and we just hit it off and had a great time.
Well, that's great. I mean, it seems like that's how the world ought to work.
Yeah, exactly. And it's usually the way mine works. I just forget it. You know, I forget
right.
it. It's like, oh, I don't have to do it the way I think I have to do it.
Right.
But, yeah, it manifested beautifully, and we had a great time, and we got to mind meld and share a lot of knowledge between all of these brilliant people and get a clearer picture of what's going on with these pyramids, because they've got people going into the tunnels that go into the pyramids that they've excavated that are, you know, with like stage 4 cancer with 30 days to live and coming out healed. And lots and lots of major illnesses and things getting healed from just going and sitting inside these pyramids. And I've had some pretty amazing experiences in them as well.
Huh.
It's quite interesting. Yeah. Just going inside meditating, these pyramids have been refuted by the mainstream for various reasons. One of the major reasons is it would change the whole narrative of human history. But also it threatens the economic income of countries that have pyramids like Egypt and Mexico, you know, because they make billions of dollars off of tourism from their pyramids. And if suddenly it was publicly acknowledged that that Bosnia has the largest pyramids in the world, then it would take billions of dollars away from them. And so they're fighting it for those kinds of reasons. And also, too, the discoveries with these pyramids, you know, Dr. Osmanagic has done a lot of science on these things to take measurements and figure out what's going on with them and prove what's going on, that they're not just mountains. But they've been criticized by mainstream archaeology also because they don't have the conventional construction that you see with other pyramids around the world with these monolithic rock slabs, you know, put together. Instead, they're made more like this material called organite, which is a material that people can make and are making that is basically particles of metals and crystals mixed into a resin. And when the resin hardens, that material will put out scalar waves, and it can be used for healing and all sorts of stuff, EMF protection, lots and lots of things. So these pyramids are doing the same thing, and they're basically giant pieces of organite rather than having these monolithic block constructions. Somebody mined a lot of clay, like millions of cubic feet of clay and river rock, and you can see where they mined it from. You know, it's like there's another mountain nearby that was made of clay that the thing was almost cut in half where they mined all this stuff to build this thing. So the claims that it's a natural formation don't fly in the face of the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, they layered millions and millions of river rocks with clay and formed it in the shape of pyramids and cones, because there's actually a whole complex of these structures for several miles around. And then, of course, they found artifacts inside these things. They found tunnels. They found writing. They've found these sidewalks that go around some of these pyramids and cones that are very precisely constructed. The blocks that construct the pavement are about maybe 18 inches thick, and they're consistently the same width. They kind of spiral around the outside of these pyramids and go from the base up to the top, and they go upwards at a very specific angle, and then they also angle in toward the pyramid at a very specific angle that actually correlates to other pyramids around the world, the exact same angles that they find this stuff on other pyramids around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sidewalks themselves, whatever they were, I think actually what they really were designed to be was not just a sidewalk to walk up around the pyramid, but also a waveguide, because it helps to create a vortex of energy with these things, which can have certain effects. But it's very precise, and it's the more they excavate, the more it's becoming obvious that these things were not naturally made. They were obviously constructed by intelligent hands. We don't know if they were human or not, or if it was, you know, some ancient race. They've carbon dated these things to about 38,000 years, but they may be older than that. But it just flies in the face of mainstream archaeology, and so they're definitely being opposed. But to his credit, Dr. Osmanagic is a very brilliant man, and he's doing the hard science and inviting scientists and engineers from around the world. He's invited all these mainstream archaeologists to come and look at these pyramids, but the archaeological societies are threatening archaeologists that if they go there, that they will lose their credentials and their jobs and that kind of stuff. So a lot of archaeologists just won't even go there. And then they've got some paid shills that are criticizing them and saying that they're not real pyramids, and they've never even been there. You know?
Wow.
So this kind of stuff is going on. But what they're discovering with these things is that they're, of course, energy machines, and right. they can be used for generating electricity. They can be used for generating other kinds of energy. They can be used for healing because they've had tons of healing miracles where people go inside and get healed of stuff. And so they threaten the medical paradigm. They threaten the energy cartels on this planet because if people discovered that they could build these things in their backyards and keep themselves healthy and not need power and that kind of stuff, then it threatens a whole lot of multi-trillion-dollar industries around the planet.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, does that fall into line with, I think it was Valerie Uvarov who wrote a thesis or a piece on the building of the pyramids that... there's a certain period of time when the Earth goes through a location in space that's rather choppy, and it can be kind of destructive, and that if pyramids are built at certain locations around the world, that they would stabilize the planet, and we would be able to go pass through that section most likely unscathed or, you know, not too badly shaken up. That made sense to me, although I don't know if it's true.
Well, I believe it is because this is one of the things, this is one of the reasons why Valeri and I hit it off right off the bat, was because both he and I have had contact with extraterrestrials, and not just in, you know, the etheric or telepathic, but physical contact. And we were both told the same thing, that these extraterrestrials throughout the ages, different ones, not all the same ones, have given humanity technologies over the millennia to help us advance, so that by the time we got to the point where we were passing through these energies in this part of the galaxy, that we would have the technology to protect ourselves from these things, from these energies creating pole shifts or other phenomena that could destroy all life on the surface. And this has happened many times in the past. According to mainstream archaeology and the historical record, in the geological record, it's known that about every 26,000 years or so that we have pole shifts, and it, you know, completely shifts the tides and the ocean levels and the magnetic field and the weather, and basically just wipes out most of the life on the surface. Mm-hmm. And so... So there are secret space program whistleblowers who are coming out and talking about this, and how there have been civilizations millennia, I mean probably millions of years ago, that have lived on this planet, human and probably other, that experienced this and eventually learned to go underground and create underground civilizations. And so, you know, some of these space program people now are coming out saying that we've got civilizations living deep inside the Earth as well, that some are human, some are not, along with extraterrestrials, you know, coming here. But the, you know, I was told the same thing that Valeri was told by different races of extraterrestrials, that basically we have been given a lot of technologies to help protect ourselves through these cataclysms, particularly in the current era. And I know myself, I've been given a lot of information to develop technologies to help humanity, which I've been doing. You know, I manufacture scalar wave devices and things for various benefits, and some I make privately that I don't sell publicly that are benefiting humanity in ways that I can't go public with because it would get me in trouble. And then, you know, people like Valeri, others, the same thing. I've met tons of scientists who have had or are having extraterrestrial contact and getting information to develop technologies to help humanity. And so it's kind of, it's not as rare and unusual as people might think. It's just that most people who are having this kind of engagement won't talk about it because it can destroy academic credentials and certainly your business opportunities and careers. I know in my own business, it has hurt many opportunities for me in business because people don't want to be associated with somebody who's talking about this stuff, even though they may acknowledge that they believe it's true or they might even have experienced it's true. So with Valeri, you know, when I first met him, and he was like brutally honest right up front and was telling me all this stuff. And I was telling him that I'd had similar experiences, and so we didn't have to explain a lot of things to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that I see that goes unacknowledged to the public a lot, that there are brilliant inventors and scientists and healers and people around the world that are getting information from extraterrestrial sources or non-human sources in various ways. Sometimes they're channeling it, sometimes they're having overt physical contact. In the case of Leary, he worked for the Russian intelligence agencies back, decades ago, and it was his job to investigate UFOs. So in the course of that career, he encountered these extraterrestrials, human extraterrestrials, according to him, that took him up on a ship and showed him his past lives, or some of his past lives, and one of them was as a general in the Martian military hundreds of thousands of years ago, and when they engaged in a war with a planet that used to be in our solar system that Mars was a moon of, called Maldek. Now this story has come out through various sources and from secret space program people, but Leary, being Russian, I don't think he was familiar with those. But at any rate, the whole history of humanity and our whole reality really has been crafted for us. Mm-hmm. And, people like Valeri and myself and others, secret space program whistleblowers now, are increasingly coming out with this information and showing that there's a very different paradigm that's occurred on this planet.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a shame that all has been absconded with and kept from us, but I have a feeling that it will be something that will be released in the not-too-distant future, and that it will come out, because it kind of has to.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's becoming increasingly difficult to keep it suppressed, because there are so many people, good people within the military, the space programs, and governments, that don't want this stuff kept hidden, and they are coming out with it at great risk to their lives also a lot of times.
That's right. Usually.
I've had death threats. I've had to go into hiding over technologies I've developed to help humanity, and I've learned. I also, back in the 90s, I worked with free energy technologies and had friends murdered over it. So, the reality of it is that it's very hazardous to your health to come out publicly and talk about this stuff, but increasingly people are. And
thank goodness, because that kind of levels the playing field.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that all of these technologies and things to save this planet actually are things that are not complicated to create and build for average people. You don't have to wait and hope for some scientist or, some company to come out with some technology that's going to save humanity. People are going to have to save themselves, and they can do it with these simple technologies like pyramids and scalar energy devices that you can build yourself with some stuff off of eBay and, Home Depot. You can build these devices for healing, for generating power, and there are a lot of different ways of doing it very simply that anybody who's mechanically inclined can do. I discovered a few years ago at a conference, there's a conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico called the Tesla Tech Conference, and they have some of the most brilliant scientists and inventors that come there and share advanced technologies. And more often than not, what occurs off stage in that conference is more educational than the conference itself. And so I met a man there who had developed a free energy water pump using something called Brown's gas. Basically, you can convert water into a gas that will burn and implode rather than explode, and it has a lot of really weird properties.
Right.
And so I had worked with Ewell Brown, the man that developed that technology, so I was very familiar with it, and I'm in this conversation with this guy, and during the conversation, he also told me how to create free energy very simply with a $40 Farberware hot plate that you can get online. And basically, these inductive hot plates that are where the burner doesn't get hot, but you put a ferrous pan on it, something with iron in it, and it will heat up the pan itself, but the burner won't get hot.
Wow.
And they do that through induction, basically by having a strong electrical coil embedded in this hot plate. And so you can take one of those hot plates and you can build what's called a Tesla pancake coil, which you can get instructions how to do that online. It's very simple. It's just a flat coil of wire wrapped in a specific way. And you lay it on the hot plate and plug the hot plate in, and it will induce about 3 to 5 times the amount of current coming out of the Tesla coil as what's going into the hot plate. So you can take that concept and apply it, for example, to solar technology, which, you know, right now solar technology that's being allowed out on the market is very expensive and not very efficient. But if you take a technology like that and combine it with solar, then suddenly you've got a free energy device that can power a home very affordably. So there's lots of stuff like that that's coming out. There's lots of stuff on YouTube that people are coming out with. There's, of course, also a lot of disinformation. But these technologies don't have to be complex, and they don't have to require high tech to create. Average people, if they start, you know, learning about these solutions and looking for these solutions, they can find them. Increasingly, you can do that.
Well, what are some of the other concerns that you can see? We mentioned a few of them at the beginning of the show. Are there, what would you say is at the top of your personal list?
Well, the number one issue that I think humanity has to deal with that kind of encompasses everything else is the mind controlling of this planet. Because, as you well know, you know, humanity has been brainwashed and mind controlled for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gotten much more sophisticated now with technology. There's all sorts of energetic technologies that are being deployed on cell phone towers and other towers, and this is not just conspiracy theory. I don't read stuff on the internet about this. Because I work with these technologies, I have found out firsthand that there's military stuff installed on cell phone towers, and there are also other towers that the military has placed around the United States, at least. And then, of course, you've got the rollout of 5G coming along as well. So
yeah,
we're being immersed in this field of electromagnetic pollution. But also there's frequency control going on utilizing these technologies to suppress consciousness. But then there's overt mind control that's been going on for decades, especially since World War II, you know, when Hitler started developing sophisticated mind control for mass mind control and individual mind control. And when the war was over, the United States, Great Britain, and Russia went into Nazi Germany to grab the spoils of war, and they were concerned that if they didn't get as much as they could, the other country would get the technology and use it against them. So there was this scramble going on right after the war ended between the U.S. and Russia, or the Soviet Union at the time, and Great Britain, to grab all these spoils of war technologies, mind scientists, those kinds of things. And so when they got all of these Nazis, they incorporated them into our military-industrial complex, usually illegally, whitewashing their dossiers and lying about them, that kind of stuff. And that's why you wind up having things like the space race occur, because you get all these Nazi rocket scientists like Wernher von Braun, who was an SS officer who came over and became a part of our military and industrial complex, and still a lot of them were very loyal to those Nazi ideals. And that influence has permeated American culture now, and this is part of the reason why you see such a negative sociopathic tendency in our leadership, our so-called leadership and administration, is because of that influence.
Mm-hmm.
But they brought with them technologies, the rocket science technology, anti-gravity technology, all kinds of stuff, and also mind science technology, and what they call trauma-based mind control, which is basically the concept of traumatizing someone repeatedly. And trauma will make the right and left brain hemisphere functions split. And when that happens, you disassociate. It's actually a natural mechanism of the mind to protect itself, so that if you're involved in a severe trauma, like, say, a car wreck, your mind disassociates from that trauma and locks it away in the unconscious mind and says, that wasn't me.
Mm.
And so by exposing people to trauma repeatedly over and over again, particularly severe trauma, what happens is the mind starts compartmentalizing more and more, and then you wind up, number one, being influenced by this trauma, not even realizing it, but also, two, it opens you up to programmability. It makes you much more open to suggestion and programming. So we've been fed this steady dose of trauma and drama through the media and movies and just all these different public outlets, the education system even, to bombard us with this continuous stream of violence and aggression and trauma and drama and bad news, et cetera, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
so that people disassociate, they become very programmable, and then the programming is slipped in continuously as well, sometimes subliminal, sometimes not. So we've developed a society, especially in the United States, that is so heavily brainwashed that we're having our realities created for us
mm-hmm.
and not even realizing it. And, of course, that leads to all sorts of pain and suffering. So that, to me, is the biggest issue that we have on the planet, because everything else will fall into line. If people are consciously creating their realities instead of de facto having it crafted for them,
mm-hmm.
then they can choose the reality that they want, and they can manifest a happy, abundant, healthy life. But that's being denied by people, being denied to people, and they don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
And they will reinforce their programming. They will fight against anything that falls outside of their comfort zone. So that, to me, is the biggest issue on this planet, and that's why I've been teaching about mind control for 25 years, even in my natural health workshops. You know, 25 years ago, people wondered why the heck I was teaching that stuff. Now they understand.
Right, right. Well,
and
now
not
it's
just about it, but how to break it.
And, of course, Tavistock is another institution that does a considerable amount of alterations on society.
Precisely.
And MK Ultra apparently just kept going.
Yeah.
As far as we know, it just continued on. They claim to have disbanded it, but if anything, it got worse.
Exactly. Well, it's become so ubiquitous now that, you know, it may not carry the label MK Ultra anymore.
Right.
But it's standard operating procedure within the military, within the intelligence communities, within law enforcement, and within society. You know, it's being
mm-hmm.
utilized everywhere.
Everywhere, including in the pedophile industry.
Yeah.
Because they find that if they can shatter a person's personality at the age of 3 by through raping them, that they can use that to their advantage and compartmentalize those different personalities and develop some and leave the others dormant.
Exactly.
So there's
and it,
go ahead.
Well, it's also why you see such a preponderance of sociopathic behavior in
oh,
the world.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, you and I are old enough to know that it wasn't so bad back in the 60s and even the 70s.
Right.
Because it wasn't
just got
so
Kennedy and another Kennedy in Maryland.
No. Right.
But,
right. I mean, it was being utilized on individuals. It was being used en masse, but not to the degree and the sophistication that it is now.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know that I wouldn't call it a department, but Ole Domegaard has spent 30 years researching this, and he says that they have complete funding for false flags. So anything that we see that falls into that category of a false flag, where that's a kid or somebody grabs a gun and kills quite a few people, that may not be real.
Exactly.
And it's staged, and they have certain techniques that they use, and you can track those techniques and see if they match, and if they do, you probably have the same group of people that are planning these out and doing the bus, you know, the bus things and the trains. It doesn't matter what it is, it's just a job to them.
Right. Right, yeah, and in my line of work, because I work with very advanced technologies, I bump into occasionally scientists and other people working in the NSA, the CIA. I mean, sometimes they come sniffing around. I've had, on quite a few occasions, government-type spooks. They don't leave their calling cards. You don't really know who they are or where they're from.
Right.
But they show up, you know, at my events or things, and you can always tell because they, first of all, look military, and they're usually very buff, fit, and all that.
Yeah.
Not always, but... So I've had some of that, but also I've had relatives in the CIA at above top secret clearance. I've known people, scientists and others in the NSA, the CIA, and they have shared with me what they know sometimes and what goes on. So for me, you know, I'm not reading this stuff on the internet and regurgitating conspiracy theories. It's actually much worse than the conspiracy theories out there. If people really knew what was going on this planet, they wouldn't believe it, number one, but they would...
Oh, right.
You know, it would traumatize them really bad. But there's most definitely this battle going on over the consciousness of the planet,
mm-hmm.
and it's utilizing not just trauma-based mind control, but also frequency control through technologies, sometimes satellite-based, but also, you know, particularly with this 5G rollout, that's going to be a major component of it.
And what about the mind-to-skull technology?
Oh, there's several of those. There's several of those. Yeah, exactly. I had a friend, actually, who was in the first Gulf War, you know, decades ago, and he would tell me he would go places like bars and public places, and he would hear his commanding officer's voice in his head telling him to do stuff. And he didn't know what was going on, but now it's known, you know, that's what they call voice of God technology, and it's used in the military. It's also used on the public sometimes. There's silent sound. There's gator technologies that are being used that will suppress consciousness, that will create aggression. It's all frequency. You know, whatever kind of energy you're using, whether it be sound or light or scalar waves or whatever, electromagnetics, it all depends on frequency. And you can use all of these energies at the right frequencies to heal and to benefit humanity, or you can use frequencies that can harm people and program them and suppress their energy and their desire to stand up for themselves and
mm-hmm.
you know, all kinds of things. And so it's gotten to be extremely sophisticated with what the military and these intelligence communities can do, let alone the spying capabilities of these technologies as well.
Oh, yes, it's almost unlimited. And then, of course, that doesn't even take into account the breakaway civilization, which I guess it's a Type 2 civilization and is capable of, crossing large distances and warp drives and the rest of it, kind of Star Trekian, and it could leave the planet at any moment if it wanted to, and it may have.
Yeah, they have. I've met three different people, completely separate occasions and separated by quite a few years apart, who all had developed anti-gravity time-traveling technologies for the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting was none of these people knew each other. None of these people were linked, in any way other than that they had developed these technologies. And their technologies were all very, very similar. They basically, what you do is if you take a spacecraft and you put it inside of a black hole, it has no mass, it has no inertia, it has no drag, it has no momentum. Well, how the heck do you put a spacecraft inside of a black hole?
mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out there are several ways of doing it. One way, Dr. John Searle from Oxford University developed a method by using these specially designed magnets, and he puts these magnets in rings, in these concentric rings, and, you know, you've got like a small ring surrounded by a larger ring, surrounded by a larger ring, surrounded by a larger ring on a two-dimensional plane, and you spin the rings in opposite directions, and the magnetic fields create these bucking magnetic fields that will create a vortex which will open up a black hole. And what we've been taught about so-called black holes is, first of all, inaccurate, and it's not really true. It's not the whole picture. And black holes aren't just these giant, you know, vortices out in space that suck all light and matter into them and crush it down. You can have black holes at different scales of size and different intensities, and in fact the entire cosmos is a web of black holes, because what they really are is one end of a vortex that is at the center of a toroidal field or a donut-shaped field. And so on one end of that donut, at the donut hole, this energy spirals into the donut hole going in, and we call that a black hole. Mm. And then the other side of the donut, it comes out, spiraling outward. And in the cosmos, and actually throughout the cosmos at every scale from the galactic to the subatomic, you've got this web of these toroidal fields. For example, galaxies have a toroidal field around them, and that's why you see at the centers of galaxies black holes. But they also, on the other side of the galaxy, have a white hole, as they are calling them. All this terminology is inaccurate, but basically you've got these vortices, these giant vortices, that will pull superluminal light into them and exude superluminal light out the other side. And this superluminal light is just light energy, that, like the light that we're familiar with, but it's traveling millions of times faster than what we've been told is the speed of light. And so it appears invisible or black to us, and so scientists call it dark energy or dark matter or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's basically light. And so the whole cosmos is this web of these toroidal fields. Galaxies have them, solar systems have them, planets and suns have them, human bodies have them, all living organisms have a toroidal scalar field around them, cells have these fields, so do molecules and atoms. So it's like, you know, this huge recursive web of these toroidal fields and singularities at their centers, and all this energy flows through it. And it's really, this superluminal light is really God consciousness. It has an intelligence behind it. And it flows through everything. Hence these stories about chi and prana, and, you know, the acupuncture meridians of the body. You know, the acupuncture meridians are actually these little deposits of superconducting minerals that allow these black holes to exist inside of our bodies. So you've got this huge web of energy flowing through everything, and we can utilize it in various ways. And, you know, the powers that be on this planet have understood this, and people, you know, on this planet have understood this for as long as people have been on this planet. They've talked about it, written about it. In the case of these anti-gravity flying saucers, CERL figured out that if you spin these concentric magnets, it opens up a toroidal field, creates a black hole at the center, and then the faster you spin these magnets, it will open up a black hole larger and larger, and if you put it inside of a spacecraft, it will encompass the entire spacecraft.
Mm.
And so then, when you're inside of a black hole, as I mentioned, there's no inertia, there's no mass, there's no drag, there's no momentum. And so you can be going 60,000 miles per hour in one of these things, traveling through the Earth's atmosphere, and it feels like you're sitting still.
Right, it would.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, John Searle, actually the CEO of Searle Magnetics, Russell Anderson, actually has public videos on YouTube where he talks about this. So you got Searle making these things. He said they, I believe they made 44 of these anti-gravity flying saucers for the military since the 50s. And then also through serendipitous events, I came across the son of T. Townsend Brown, who T. Townsend Brown is known within these esoteric circles and within the military. He was one of the people that created anti-gravity technology back in the 50s for the U.S. military as well. And so his son tried to continue on his work with these energy technologies, but didn't really have the background and understanding, and wound up hurting himself with some of the energies that came off of these things. And so he got in touch with me to get help with healing. And so this is how I got firsthand information from this guy about what T. Townsend Brown had done, which was quite fascinating. And then on another occasion, I met another man who was completely unconnected from these people, who also, he had worked at Los Alamos Labs and had developed anti-gravity flying saucers for himself and his friends that worked at Los Alamos. And they wound up getting caught with it, and the government took it away from them. They all had these similar kinds of technologies. You create some kind of a vortex that opens up a black hole, and then you encompass the spacecraft around it. And then not only do you transverse space, but you can also transverse time as well.
Right, so right. That's kind of one of the startling or more surprising aspects of it.
Yeah.
And they claim that you don't affect time in that way, but there may be more to it than just a couple of lines on a radio show.
Yeah, these reptilian extraterrestrials I encountered back in 1995, one of the things that they told me that I thought was pretty funny, actually, they said that our concept of time is a quaint local custom. Time doesn't exist the way that we think it does.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a continuum or a series of events. That's just our perception of it. It actually, mm-hmm. everything exists simultaneously.
Yeah.
And now, of course, mainstream science increasingly is coming out and saying this. And so when you understand that, then time and space are so interconnected, and our physical structures limit our true understanding of it. But it's an energetic, and it most certainly can be manipulated. And even, within our common sense conceptualization of time, when we move through space, we're moving through time at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that relationship is being understood more and more publicly. The military knows quite a bit about it because they've reverse engineered ET spacecraft and technologies, and they've learned a lot about it. And increasingly, that's starting to come out with inventors and scientists outside of the military.
Mm.
But most certainly, you can manipulate time. And from what I hear, I have not done it myself, but I have met people who claim to have done it. So I think it is possible.
Well, one of the things that I remember hearing about was that the future secret agencies, of whatever you want to call them, the NSA or the equivalent of the FBI and the CIA, were sending packets back in time to their cohorts. Which were sealed, and it was telling them who the most likely presidents would be and who to groom and who to not encourage.
Right.
According to their interpretation of their preferred timeline for world domination
exactly.
control, Goldfinger was nothing compared to some of these psychopaths that are running things.
Very true, and I was told by these reptilians that that there have been many, many different types of extraterrestrials that have manipulated timelines throughout our history and, of course, around the cosmos, but that it's not as easy to do as one might think.
Mm.
Because of the nature of time, it kind of tends to be self-healing if you try to manipulate it, but also apparently there's some sort of intelligence or energetic in the cosmos that won't allow certain manipulations of timelines. So they can only do so much. And from what I hear, some of these secret space program people are saying now that very advanced extraterrestrials, like non-corporeal energetic types, are preventing extraterrestrials from coming and manipulating our timeline.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah. Yeah, because, if you can manipulate time and influence events, then you have a huge control over the direction of a civilization.
Absolutely, and there would be no record of what any alternative that had happened because it wouldn't have happened.
Right, exactly.
You mentioned something interesting a couple of times about talking to reptilians, and I know a lot of people have talked to various races. And were you in a situation where you were able to talk to them personally, or was this a telepathic communication?
It started out telepathic for a couple of years, and I didn't believe that it was really extraterrestrial because, I'm
You're right.
skeptical. There was all this information that was coming in out of the blue. There's no way I was the source of it, but
I
and it would come in at really odd times. Basically, it would come in whenever I was not focused on my surroundings and my events and things. So usually it was when I was like honestly, hilariously, either like on the toilet or doing something where I was captivated, where I wasn't distracted by things. But it was just, you know, like information, particularly about science, that just came out of left field that had nothing to do with my world at the time. And so at first I just thought it was interesting ideas coming in, and I didn't think about the source. But then I got exposed to the concept of channeling, and I thought, well, I wonder if this stuff that's coming in maybe is coming from some third party. So I started talking to it as if it was a third party, and they identified themselves as extraterrestrial when I queried them. And I said, well, you know, if you really are extraterrestrials and I'm not just talking to myself in my head, then I have to meet you physically.
Ah, good and, for you.
Yeah, because, I mean, I went to school for engineering. I'm trained to think that way, and I wanted empirical evidence. Not
absolutely.
Just voices in my head. Otherwise, it could just be mind control. It could be, who knows.
Right, right.
You know.
Skullfuck technology.
Right. So I kept pressing for it, and they kept saying, no, we can't do that because human DNA has been programmed to fear us, and it would traumatize you too much.
Right.
And it would interfere with the work that we want to do with you, and blah, blah. I was like, well, I don't care. So I kept pressing them for it. And eventually I was at this power place in North Carolina. It was on a farm where some people had dug out a spring and unknowingly basically created a giant skater vortex on this property. And so I was at a party at this farm, and there was a guy. At the time, I was a computer programmer and in information technology, and, you know, I don't think I even knew the word Illuminati back then. I was very unaware of what was going on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy there. This was not long after the Soviet Union breakup, and there was a guy who was also a computer programmer there who was a freelancer. He was getting paid large amounts of money to go to the former Russian satellite countries and install computer systems that were basically being used by world management to control those countries through their financial systems.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I didn't know about any of this stuff, so that wasn't like an ethical concern for me. I just didn't want to work with the technology that he was working with. He wanted me to come and work with him and do this stuff in these, you know, various countries. And I thought the travel would be great, but I don't want to work with the crappy technology he was working with.
Right, right.
It was all this clunky technology where I was working in a state-of-the-art facility, and I had a big budget, and, you know, I was just in a really good and professional environment, and I didn't want to lose that for working with this clunky technology. So he's trying to convince me to do it, and he said, well, let's go down to this spring where we had been dug out and meditate. And this was, you know, where this vortex was that nobody knew at the time. And so we were sitting there meditating, and as happens many times, you know, when I'm not captivated by life,
right,
they start coming in telepathically and talking to me, and they would always start the conversation by saying, we are here. And so I just thought it was so absurd, you know, sitting there doing this and having these voices come in. So I said to the guy sitting with me, I said, you're not going to believe this, but I've got reptilian ETs talking to me on my head. And to my great surprise, he said, yeah, they're talking to me, too.
Oh, wow.
I was like, yeah. Really? So,
very cool.
Yeah, so we kept meditating. And, you know, we had our eyes closed. And I said, well, what do you want? And they said, well, we are here. I said, yeah, I know you told me that, but what do you want? Now we're here physically. Open your eyes. And we both opened our eyes, and they're about 50 yards away in the woods. This was in a valley, and it was in the evening. And it was backlit by the setting sun. There were these three giant reptilian humanoid figures back there.
Wow.
The small one was about 12 feet tall. The large one was about 18 feet tall.
Wow, yeah, they're big.
These ones were huge. Now, it may have been a holographic projection, so they may have been projecting something bigger than what they actually were.
Right,
I don't know. But it definitely made an impression on me. And
yeah.
At first, I didn't believe it. You know, I'm looking at this, and I'm trying to grok it. I'm, like, smacking myself in the face, shaking my head to see if it would go away, to see if it was a mirage or something. It wouldn't go away. And, you know, they're communicating telepathically. It wasn't anything sinister. I didn't feel a sense of, you know, foreboding or anything. They weren't scary. They weren't even scary looking. I looked online to see if I could find any pictures or drawings that anybody might have had on the web that look like them. And there's some that come kind of close, but they always have this sinister look on the pictures online. And they didn't look sinister. They actually looked benevolent.
Huh.
They weren't wearing any clothes. They didn't have any genitals that you could see. They were very muscular but kind of slender, and they were covered with scales. And they looked so stereotypical Hollywood, I thought somebody must be jerking me around. Because they reminded me very much of a reptilian E.T. in the original Star Trek series, and then kind of a cross between that and Mr. Worf in Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh, yes, right.
They had these three ridges going down their head, one on the right, one on the left, and one right down the middle going down the nose. It looked like Mr. Worf, and I thought, somebody's messing with me. So I really didn't believe it at first, so I wasn't scared, and I'm just trying to grok it, and they're kind of standing there swaying back and forth a little bit, so I could see, even though it wasn't really well lit, I could see their features. And after a couple of minutes, I started to realize, like, holy crap, this is real. And then I got terrified. And so then I said, it was really instinctual, and I said to the guy with me, let's get the hell out of here. And we ran back to the house where a party was going on. And, you know, this is back in my 30s. Back in those days, I cared what people thought of me. And so I wasn't about to tell anybody at the party that I had just seen reptilian ETs, and neither did my friends. So we kind of compared notes and came to realize that what had occurred was they were communicating telepathically simultaneously to us both. And I think they did that so that I wouldn't just think it was all in my head. You know, I had a witness there, and he was hearing the same things. So that was, you know, after that, for a couple years, I was terrified that I was going to get abducted. And, you know, I was a runner, so I would be out every evening.
Oh, yeah.
You know, running at nighttime in the winter when it was, you know, the days were short and it was dark at night, I would be afraid something was going to, jump out and take me off a flying saucer or something.
Oh, yeah. Cue the Alfred Hitchcock music.
Yeah. But eventually I got over it, and they continued to communicate telepathically, and they were always not only benevolent, but they gave me a lot of very practical advice about how to be a human being day to day, which I thought was kind of interesting considering what they were telling me about the reptilian culture and how they didn't have emotions like us and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they said it was because they had, these particular ones had, were working with some human extraterrestrials, and they had all had experiences in their lives that had shifted their viewpoint around humanity and emotions and all sorts of things. And their civilization was in dire straits because they can only go so far operating the way that they do. Their birthing process, this is what they showed me. They actually showed me visuals of this. The reason that the so-called Draco reptilians that people are talking about on you know, secret space program whistleblowers and stuff now, and talking about how they're so very negative and warlike and fierce and all of that, it's because their birthing process and their upbringing, they're not born and raised like humans. When reptilian couples have fertilized eggs, they're taken to communal nurseries and they're hatched in these communal nurseries, and they're only given enough resources for the strongest ones to survive, and so most of them die in that process. And so they don't, because they're not raised by their parents, they don't have any connection or nurturing from their parents, first of all. And then they have to fight and compete over food and resources to survive. And so they become very warlike and very sociopathic or psychopathic. And they value strength and conquering because they have to survive in their reality. But because it goes against the fundamentals of how the universe works, you can only go so far with that. You know, energetically overall, the universe, the frequency in the universe is a love frequency. And so there are realms and pockets of this fear-based reality, but it can only go so far and spread so far. And so they're having a lot of major problems in their time and place. Still there?
The beep. That's the beep from the eye in the sky that tells us that we're out of time.
Okay. But anyway, the influence is part of the reason why you see all of this sociopathic behavior on our planet. They're getting more and more desperate.
Well, Unfortunately, it's just getting to the most interesting part of the show. We could go on for a couple of more hours, probably, but we're out of time. And so I just wanted to thank you for coming back on the show and also give you a brief opportunity to mention anything that's really important coming up.
Okay. Well, I just got done traveling, so I won't be going. This summer I'll be traveling around Florida doing some presentations, particularly on the west coast of Florida. So folks can watch for that on my website at freshandalive.com. And then I will be speaking in Toulouse, France in September about how to clear chemtrails and nuclear fallout and how to maintain health amidst all of that and GMOs and biowarfare agents and that kind of stuff. So
wonderful. Well, that sounds like a terrific trip, and you do the most incredible work on the planet, Ken, and I thank you for coming on and sharing some of that with us tonight, and we'll have to continue this story on another night.
All right, anytime, Lance. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.